David Cohen buys a computer from a dead person. It's Necrophilia Podcast number, or My Mac Podcast number 197.
The next generation of radio, it's the MyMac.com Podcast.
And it's time for My Mac's Podcast number 197. So I opened the show very differently this week, guys. Joining me at the beginning of the show is David Cohen from the UK. Hello, David Cohen from the UK.
Hello, everybody.
And, of course, the one, the only, Guy Searle.
Oh, God, yes.
So you got to tell us the story. You started telling us the story, David. We told you, stop. Let's save it for the podcast so we don't hear it ahead of time.
So, yeah, so the story is that I bought a new Mac, and yeah, I think I bought it from a dead guy. I was walking from my office. I'm doing some work in a small town not far from Manchester at the moment. I was walking from my office back to the car this afternoon, and every day I walk past this one of these places that goes and clears out people's houses when they die or they move or they get foreclosed, and basically sells all the furniture and the fittings. So they always have piles of furniture and sofas and stuff piled up outside. As I walked past today, I saw they had an Apple iMac box in the window with a sign on it saying for sale. So of course, you know, it's an Apple box. I've got to go and check it out. So I mean, sure. Dived in there and had a look, and it's an iMac G5. But I think probably the second revision of the iMac G5. So it's about 3 years old.
1.8
G5. Right. You know, with the white case rather than the aluminium case.
That's a good computer, though.
We've only had it in the store about 10 minutes, and they just unboxed it and powered it up to check it worked. These guys, they move furniture for a living. They did not know what on earth it was, really. I said, oh, well, can I have a look at it and understand what the spec is? And, you know, they gave me a price, and the price was extremely fair. So I said, I'll be back.
Well, we got to know what the price is.
Well, I paid £250, so $500.
Oh, jeez, that's cheap.
It is cheap.
And it's in perfect condition. Got the original box, all the original discs and documentation, a keyboard and mouse, and also a Bluetooth wireless mouse as well.
Now, so, is this the 17-inch or the 20-inch?
17-inch.
Right.
Okay. It's a good machine.
Yeah, that's the same one my kids are using.
Yeah, it's very, very nice. It's running Tiger at the moment, but I think I'm going to be bumping up to Leopard.
Well, and you may want to hold off on putting Leopard on it. A lot of the G5 iMacs have a problem with Leopard and Wi-Fi. So if you're going to use Wi-Fi on it, then you may want to stick with Tiger.
Yeah, I need to decide what I'm going to do with it, actually, because I could take it to my office and I could use it there, or alternatively I could sort of start shuffling machines around here, and maybe my wife's got a Core 2 Duo Intel iMac that she's using at the moment, and all she really does is check mail on it, so I might swap it out for that. But
that's a nice problem to have, though.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. So
especially for that price.
Yeah,
did it have all the other person's information still on it?
It does. Bookmark? I mean, I saw a pile of stuff on there. So
you
as
check iPhoto.
I've not.
Some,
I've not
some,
yet.
Some I, dead guy lying
I'll,
here.
I'll just say do a search for .jpg. Yeah. If you come up with like 5,000 JPEGs and it's not an iPhoto. I don't know. It might be something else.
Yeah, maybe. But all I would say is, as you open the show with, typically these stores, they've cleared houses when somebody unfortunately has passed on. So if that's the case, then I hope that they will be gratified by the fact that their fairly good condition iMac has gone to a good home.
Absolutely. I mean, and someone that's both a Mac journalist and a podcaster, so... His Mac is actually famous. He's probably more famous now
dead
than he was alive. You should really seriously try to figure out who owned it before.
I'm going to get before I wipe it off. I'm going to get it powered up and really go through the hard drive and see.
Yeah, see, let's see if we could find out who he was and then find his obituary.
Okay.
And we'll read his obituary right here on the show next week.
Sounds like a fitting tribute to me.
With appropriate music.
Absolutely, very mournful.
Yes.
So, anyways, no, that's a good deal. I mean, it's unfortunate someone, passed away and that's how you got it. But at least the machine found a nice home. It's not sitting in some shop and it's going to go to some person who wouldn't appreciate paying £500 for something like that. I mean,
well, yeah. 250.
Or 250 yeah. pounds.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's cool. Really, really awesome. So anything going on with you this week, Guy Searle?
Other than trying to put together yet another new site, no.
Yet another new site. What's going on with that?
Yeah, its title right now is Whirling Vortex of Suck. So I went to GoDaddy and grabbed THEWVOS because I think trying to get people to actually type in whirlingvortexofsuck.com would suck. So that would probably make it a little ironic. But we'll see. I may do absolutely nothing with it, and I may have fun with it. I don't really plan on putting a whole lot in, and if I can get it out there at all, I'll tell people, just send me stuff that you think sucks, and it'll go here on this site.
Oh, that'd be cool. You should see if you can make it so open that they could submit their own stuff.
Right.
So they can just write the post, hit submit, and then you just approve the ones that are good, I guess you could. If it sucks, then and it would be appropriate.
Well, it has to suck. That's the only criteria.
So I'm posting up on Twitter right now, recording podcast. So anybody listen to this and they see that up there on Twitter, you know exactly when I wrote that and posted it. Interactive, baby. So, Guy,
yes.
we actually got some email about our show last week.
Oh, really?
And it was just you and I. And people don't like you right now.
Screw them. They suck.
One of the emails was this guy from the UK named David Cohen.
Oh, him.
Who basically said he was yelling at his computer or his iPod at the time. Listening to you and I.
Yeah,
go ahead, David.
I was going to say, I need had an embolism.
Yeah.
Well, what was it you didn't agree with, besides my awful hairdo?
It was your whole, Apple should support IE thing. Because really, it's more a case of Microsoft should support web standards, and then it wouldn't be an issue.
Oh, I don't disagree with that at all. That was never the point I was trying to make.
So,
your point was?
Well, if we're going to
get into this, Microsoft's not going to do it, Apple should do it, dang it.
No, it's just that, more and more people are buying iPhones. Many, if not most of them, are on Windows. The number one browser on Windows is IE. So if you're going to sell a service that's going to be in conjunction with this device that you're selling, it should work with the browser that most people have. And that was essentially my whole argument.
Okay. I think the problem is that quite apart from whether they should or shouldn't support IE, which is, is in some ways is a philosophical debate about web standards and, why Microsoft has to go and do its own thing and the sort of fancy technology built into MobileMe, which, Firefox can support fine, but IE has to do things the Microsoft way. I think one point to think about is that they're having enough problems just getting it working with Safari.
With open web standards, right.
And so it could well be that is on the roadmap, but, they've got to get the thing working for Macs first before they can get around to even thinking about supporting IE. The other thing, as I commented to Tim before you came on the show, is that when you're at work, many organizations will put firewall blocks in to stop you getting to webmail sites anyway. So even if IE was fully supported, I suspect in your case you might still have difficulties getting to it.
Well, heck, I'm still on IE 6. IE 6.
Well,
yeah,
but you are dead to them.
Yeah, well,
you are a spyware, malware infested suck on their landscape.
Well, I think that pretty much goes without saying.
Speaking of Microsoft, up at the unofficial Apple weblog, which is a really good website, by the way, if anybody listening to this doesn't check it out at tuaw.com. Horrible URL, but it's a really good website. Microsoft developer talks about Office 2008 update issues. Now, we've been talking about the problems with Office 2008 quite a bit lately.
Yes.
In fact, just on the last show, Guy, you and I were talking about it, how Sam Levin was trying to update it, and it wouldn't update, saying that he didn't have a copy of Office on his computer, and yet, yes, he did. And then I had said I had exactly the same issue. So one of the developers, lead developers at the Mac business unit at Microsoft, posted up on his blog, let's see, Schweiber is the guy's name, has responded to the problem on his blog saying that the problems are most likely because users have deleted or otherwise messed with files inside the installation, causing the installer to abort. So in other words, you know what? It's not updating right. It's got to be the user's fault. That's Microsoft's response to an update that won't update their application correctly.
Well, now, I've got this program.
You can't even install it.
Well, I can install it, but I can't get past the validation part of it. I keep getting an error file every single time I hit submit. And it doesn't matter what I put in or how carefully I put it in or what section I put it in, I get the same friggin' error message every single time. And if I had paid full price for this program, I would have been pretty ticked off. But as it was through their home use program, it cost me $25. So I'm not, like, insane about it. But it still should just work. And so far, it does not.
Yeah.
Go ahead, David.
I was going to say, this came across to me very much like somebody who's well in the Windows way of doing things. You know, this really should not be for Macintoshes. You know, you should be able to write your installer. So, I mean, at the very least, to write your installer, if you do think that that's the cause of the problem, to write your installer to detect that and tell the user that that's what the problem is and say, sorry, it looks like some files in your Office installation are damaged and we can't install this update. You're going to have to do a reinstall. Instead of just crashing out and dropping back to the desktop, and then you've got to wait 6 weeks for some guy to post in a blog somewhere what he thinks the problem might be.
Yeah. And he says in the MacBU users, blah, 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 blah. He specifically calls out XSlimmer
and Monolingual.
Yep. The two programs that often delete unnecessary files in OS X.
Neither of which I use.
Neither of which I've even heard of. And I had this problem. I never mess with anything inside the package files. I never do. I never delete any of that stuff. So that obviously wasn't the problem with me. But this kind of smacks of a smack in the face to me in that, it's got to be something else. It can't possibly be
our software.
Our software, yeah. That's the problem.
And I'm sorry. And that's bullshit.
And it obviously is the problem. It is Microsoft's fault.
You look at the size of these patches as well. This is what, the third or fourth patch for Office 2008?
400 megabytes?
Well, yeah, exactly. I wouldn't know since I can't finish installing the damn thing.
Yeah, but they've all been that big. They are making serious changes to the underlying code of this application because it's such a bug fest. And, you know, to turn around and so try to say, don't get me wrong, I'm quite sure if somebody has run something, I've used Monolingual before, and, you know, it can get rid of a couple of gigs of data off your drive. And I'm quite sure that if you have used an application like that, then it would upset installers for certain applications. But to assume that everybody's having the problem has done that is frankly short-sighted.
But even if that was the case, shouldn't their installation process have some kind of a checksum that checks for commonly deleted items?
Yeah.
And if those are there, they've been deleted, it simply reinstalls it?
On the Windows side, if they have this sort of problem, if you try to do a patch and you've deleted part of your Office installation, what it does, it will ask you for the original Office CD and will reinstall the files it needs to actually bring the application up and do that. So why can't they do that on the Mac side? I'll tell you why, because the Windows guys and the Mac side, the Mac part of Microsoft, are two completely separate, independent groups of people who don't work together.
But there's Mac applications, David, that does run a checksum, and if something's missing, it simply downloads what it needs from the internet during the installation, installs what it needs, and continues on. They've been doing that for years. I don't understand why a big company and a big developer like Microsoft seems completely oblivious to simple solutions and turning around and blaming the users for something like this. It kind of pisses me off.
My standing advice is still the same, is that if you need Office on the Mac, try and get hold of Office 2004 rather than 2008. And if you need more advanced file support than Office 2004 can give you, then have a strong look at running the Windows version of Office 2007 under Parallels.
Well, do you think that could be part of my problem? Because I do have Office 2004 on my Mac, and that was a home – again, I got through the home use program.
Yeah, I would probably delete that first.
Maybe not delete it, but there's all the support crap too.
Yeah, I would go ahead and delete it and then try to run the installation. That will probably take care of it. I know, but here, yet again, Microsoft didn't count on anybody having a previous version of their software on their computer.
Yeah.
And this is going to completely cause the new application not to install, or if it does install, to cause it to crash and be buggy? Come on, this is the year 2008. This isn't 1996 anymore. I mean, I'm sorry, Microsoft. I support a lot of your Mac products because I've liked them in the past.
Right.
The worst product that you've ever come out with, in my opinion, for the Mac was, what was it, Word 95? Word 98. It was a horrible product. It was so buggy.
That was the one that they tried to make it look exactly like the Windows side of it.
Yeah, and it was just the word. Nah, Word 98 doesn't sound right to me. I don't know why. But whatever it was, it was a version of Word that was absolutely atrocious, and it really made a lot of people mad that they had to give up Word 5.1 to use this copy of Word. And it just did not work. I'm sorry, Microsoft, but it's starting to look like Office 2008 for the Macintosh is going to take the crown away from that older version for suck. Absolutely. And here's the thing. There's a lot of people that need Office on the Mac. And at this point, we almost have to say you might be better off getting a used copy on eBay of 2004.
Trying out iWork if your needs are not to the point that you need something
cross compatibility.
But both Pages and Keynote are cross compatible as far as their files go.
I got PR from Microsoft wanting me to promote the student pricing program for Office 2008 for the Macintosh. And they followed up like three times with email saying, "Hey, did you get that? Are you going to talk about it?" And no, I'm not. If you want to become a sponsor, you want to pay for an advertisement, I'll advertise it, but I'm not going to recommend it personally. I'll let you put in an ad for it, but I'm going to turn right around afterwards and say, "Be aware this is a buggy program."
Yeah.
Because it's our listeners. It's our readers on our website. My first concern is being honest. Being truthful, and this is not good software right now. If Microsoft releases a patch for Office 2008 that really squashes all these bugs, I'll be the first one to say, "Hey, you should probably pick this up now. It's really, really a lot better, and it's a good piece of software." But they haven't done that yet. It's still buggy. It still crashes all the time. You can't run an updater on it. Guy can't even install the stupid thing.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's just crazy. Speaking of Microsoft, yet again, third Microsoft. What's the deal with Jerry Seinfeld getting $10 million from Microsoft to basically advertise, Windows?
Yeah.
It's called to appear in a series of ads for its Windows, not Walls commercials. and it's going to feature Seinfeld and Bill Gates. You know, here's the thing, though, and I hope they're funny. I really do. Because they're not going to convince me to switch back to Windows.
No.
Or switch to Windows at all. And I don't think it will probably convince anybody. I've got a feeling that this is in response to the, let's just say, lukewarm response to Vista.
Yeah.
Okay.
But if Jerry Seinfeld's in it, I kind of imagine it's going to be pretty funny. You remember those American Express commercials with Jerry Seinfeld and Superman?
Yeah.
Those were brilliant. Those were so good.
He's still Superman still needs to get that money back off the Green Lantern.
And and you know, Bill Gates does have a sense of humor. You don't usually get to see it, but I've seen stuff that he's done, internal videos for Microsoft with like Napoleon Dynamite, and Bill Gates does not shy away from being the butt end of the joke. But Bill retired from Microsoft. But he's going to come back and do commercials with Jerry Seinfeld.
Hey, why not?
For Windows.
Well, he's still very strongly associated with the brand, isn't he? And let's face it.
Well, I think he's also on the board of directors.
Yeah, and maybe
they're going to pay him $10 million too.
he's got the time on his hands, hasn't he? So
Let's see. The ad agency says it's going to launch on September 4th. So I hope they're good
Crispin
commercials.
Porter
I really do.
And Boguski, a Miami-based ad shop.
I hope what they don't do though is try and either copy the Get a Mac ads or alternatively try and turn it over and have a jab back at Apple. I think Microsoft's problem at the moment is nothing to do with Apple. It's to do with their own failings. And I think the ads, if they're smart, what they need to do is just try and overturn some of the perhaps incorrect perceptions about Vista.
Well, I think if they kind of copy the Mac versus PC ads, I think that would be very entertaining. I think that would.
I don't think it would be an effective message, and I think that would probably be a bad strategy for them.
Well, maybe, but it would be funny.
But Microsoft has sat still for 3-4 years now, while Apple has run these very effective Get a Mac ad campaigns with the Mac and the PC, and which, by the way, there's some new ones out there. One of them is just hilarious. The guy's in a pizza box. He's trying to worm his way back into the house by hiding himself as Vista in a pizza box. It's quite funny. You got to check that out up on Apple.com.
Well, the one I saw was the one about that users were afraid to switch, and PC was saying, "But that's how I'm keeping them on Windows." And reaches up and pulls down like this fake color screen. Okay, that's it. We're turning this one off. And then he does this like fake kind of sound in the background.
Yeah. Have you seen the Mojave?
No, I've heard of it, but I haven't watched any of them yet. I can't think of anything that would unless I was having problems falling asleep one night. I'm not going to watch something like that.
This is one of the most pathetic PR campaigns I've ever seen. Basically, it's Microsoft's counter to Vista sucks, that people don't want to try Vista. So they interview people. Now, you got to understand, and obviously whoever did this for Microsoft, if it was an external company, if it was Microsoft themselves, oy. But you got to understand the viewership on the internet. Most people will go to a site, watch something for less than 20 seconds, decide then if they're going to continue to watch or not, and if they don't, boom, they're gone.
Right.
So in the first 20 seconds of what is, in essence, a commercial for Vista, it's tricking users into trying Vista by telling them, this is Mojave. It's the next version of Windows. And people go, oh, it's great, and I love it. And they go, ha, 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 it's really Vista. And they go,
sucker!
Oh, my gosh. Right. But here's the thing. It starts out with people saying how bad Vista is. Oh, it's horrible. I would never try Vista. And that lasts for 20, 30 seconds. So by the time someone decides whether they're going to continue to watch it or not, if they've decided not to, the only thing that they got out of it was how bad Vista is.
Well, there is, they do have to follow the truth in advertising laws.
I've already bashed Microsoft on the show. And, I guess it's still fashionable to bash Microsoft. But I will say, Microsoft's Windows Vista is not a bad operating system.
No, I'd agree with that.
I think it is actually better than XP. I think it's the best OS that they've ever come out with.
Now,
yeah, I think it does have some pretty large problems. I think there are some parts of it that really need to be sorted out. But you know, as an overall OS, yeah, I'd probably be inclined to agree with that. It if you've got the right hardware, it's very nice looking.
I'm gonna retract what I said. I don't think it's the best. Actually, I think the best OS that Microsoft ever did was NT. NT was very stable, very powerful. It scaled really well, and it did a lot of things that the consumer version of Windows did not do.
Yeah.
So I got to take that back. I think NT was probably the best version of Windows. But that's like saying what's the best hamburger McDonald's makes. I mean,
yeah.
Let's take a minute and pause and thank our sponsor, Otherworld Computing. You can check them out at MacSales.com. This week, I picked a very inexpensive item, $17.95. That's pretty cheap, guys.
Yeah, and this is, you know, if you do any type of work on your computer or really any type of electronics, this is the kind of kit that you're going to want. I mean, it's basically an 11-piece portable toolkit. Folds up. It's got a little zipper. You can almost put it in your back pocket. It's got straight blades. It's got Phillips. It's got three different size Torx. It's got a scissor clamp, tweezers, you know, nylon pry tools. This is really a nice little piece of kit.
It's one of these things that, as somebody that I've been an IT manager in the past, I've had to work on many computers. As an IT manager, a kit like this is invaluable.
Yeah,
but now that I'm not an IT manager, the only computers I really have to manage are my own. I can tell you that I've got kits just like this. Unfortunately, they're not all together anymore because when it comes to putting my tools back where they belong, I'm horrible at that. And so I'm like, oh, I've got the screwdriver from one kit and I've got the tweezers from another. But kits like this make working on your computer so much easier. There's nothing worse. Then starting to work on your computer, you get it cracked open, you've got the cloth laid out, and you've got the anti-static wristband on, and you go, crap, I don't have
a Torx 8.
A Torx 8, exactly.
Yeah.
So now you got to, you know, tell everybody in the household, stay away from the computer, I have to run down to the hardware store. Yeah, and
put the cats outside.
And it's just a huge pain in the butt. So for less than $20, $17.95, go up to Otherworld Computing, and I'll put a link right on show 197 directly to this product. An 11-piece portable toolkit. It's going to be easy to keep it together. It's a small footprint. You can put it in a drawer by your computer or whatever. It's something that you really should have.
And I think, you know, particularly for working on Macs, the fact that this kit includes the two pry tools, the spudgers, for
yes.
The key thing about these is they allow you to pry things open, which are, you know, glued together
safely.
Without scratching the finish, which is something obviously you don't want to do. And you can, if you're careful, you can do it with a very flat-bladed screwdriver. But the problem is, if you just get it wrong, or you get the level of twist or force wrong, you'll put a mark in the edge of whatever it is you're trying to pry open, and then you'll hate yourself, and you'll start thinking, why did I even start thinking that I should ever open this up in the first place?
Exactly.
And you know, you don't want to do that. Having these, you can't. I've never seen anywhere else where you could get something like this. You can try and find a piece of plastic that might do the job, or you can try and use a putty knife or something like this. But really, you know, if you've got tools that are dedicated to do the job and they're right there with your screwdrivers and everything else, I mean, what more could you want, really?
Yep. And the nice thing about this toolkit is, you know, if you've got a desk or whatever that you use your computer on, this will fit into a small drawer. It'll fit almost anywhere where you're sitting, and it'll be right out of the way, but right there when you need it.
So thank you, Otherworld Computing, for sponsoring the podcast. Again, go up, check out show 197. We'll link directly to the newer technology 11-piece tool sets. We're going to jump over to a Sam Levin Cool Mac Picks. I think it's all apps this week, so let's find out. We'll be right back with Guy Searle and maybe somebody else. And it's time for Cool Mac Picks with Sam Levin. Hello, Sam Levin.
Hey, how you doing?
How's App Minute going?
App Minute's great, and we're going to really feature that today. I call it the Cool App Pick. That's
the
my
Cool App Minute Pick.
Cap, just Cool App Pick instead of
Cool App Pick. Okay.
Cool Mac Pick. So, but let's, should we get the winners mentioned or what?
Absolutely. You are a winner, Sam. You are a winner. Oh, you mean for the contest?
Yes, yes. The PosiMotion contest.
The PosiMotion contest. The first winner we've got is John Simmons. I believe he's in Canada because his email address ends with a .ca. So I don't know if that's going to be a problem, but I don't think it is. I think you could send iTunes gift cards pretty much anywhere in the world. I've done that before.
Yep.
So I'm sending this to you right now, Sam, so you can send this over to
PosiMotion,
and then they can get that taken care of.
Yes.
And the next one, all we have is a name. Wait a minute. No, there it is. Jason Waltz. W-A-L-Z. Walls? Is that Walls? Jason Walls. And Jason's a winner. So two gift cards going to two winners this week. And we're going to do the contest again next week, not this week, right?
Right. Next week.
So next Jason week. Walls, congratulations, and John Simmons, congratulations. That's our two winners from the PosiMotion contest.
Right, PosiMotion, you've got to check those cool iPhone apps out. They have games, utilities.
And Jason and John, if you do buy something from PosiMotion on the iTunes store, send us an email, let you know what you think of their applications, and we'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely.
Cool. So what you got for us this week, Sam?
Well, we're talking about apps. This is going to be the app week. I figured we might as well start off with the app winners from PosiMotion and work our way into some fun entertainment apps. I really like fun stuff. And actually, you were one of them that you were mentioning one of the apps, not just AOL Radio, but one of the apps from a company called eZone. And they make – it's a really fun – pastime or stupid little app called Crazy Mouth. They make free light version, so it's
my kids love this, Sam.
Right. When I heard that, I said, "Well, okay, I'll check it out." And I remember seeing something about it. And what really did it for me is that I went to the video and looked at their videos, and it was really funny. And I could just imagine that, being in a bar and sticking your iPhone up to your mouth, and all these different videos of different mouths. Play,
it's funny.
It's really cute. It's kind of like a cartoon.
As a matter of fact, Sam, as you talk, go ahead. I'm going to bring it up real quick here, okay. And we can play it right on the show.
So for 99 cents, you get about five crazy mouths, and of course, I want more. I want like 100. But
I do too.
For 99 cents, I think it's cute. It's worth it because it's fun.
I've only got the light version, Sam, the free one. It comes with two. Is it worth the 99 cent
to
get the other two?
I would say yes, but really, I think that they should offer a few more. I would say for a buck, 6 to 8 would be fair. So what's really cute is if your kid has it in front of them, then it becomes even more fun.
Now, the next one on the free version, Sam, this is the one our 8-month-old just loves. Every time I do this, I get a smile, and it just cracks me up. He just loves that one.
It's cute.
It cracks me up.
It's cute.
It's virtually a useless application, and sometimes those are the best.
Because you don't have to do much. You press a button, you put it in front of your mouth, and I think it's cute. It's called Crazy Mouth. Check it out from eZone. We provided the link directly to the App Store. So anyway, try it out. Next up on our entertainment slate for applications for iPhone apps, and by the way, does work on iPod Touch as well, is Pangea. Pangea is well known on the Mac space or within the Mac space is producing really high quality Mac graphical games. And they've got a few games. One of them is called Cro-Mag Rally, which is basically a driving game, and you're like a Cro-Magnon man driving. It looks like a Flintstone mobile, and you're in a rally, and you're using your iPhone with the accelerometer to drive through these courses, speed courses. And it's pretty cool. So you can use your iPhone to navigate left, right, and press on the gas, similar to the folks at Freeverse. A lot of people are using that, pressing the screen for gas. And so it's called Cro-Mag Rally. It's $5.99. It's a lot of fun.
I keep thinking about buying it. I've got the Crash Bandicoot Racing.
Right.
And I think, well, you know, I've already got one racing game. Is it worth picking up another one for $6?
I like it, and you can spend a lot of time on this thing. So I suspect if you plug it into some bigger speakers, it's more fun because
we're
enriching the sound, in my opinion, the more engaging the gameplay is. So I like it. I'm going to say yes, it's worth it because they've done a really good job with their games. Pangea is well known in the Mac space on producing high-quality games.
And they've been doing a good job for a number of years now.
A lot. Yeah. They produce games that Apple actually bundled with the iMac years ago. What was the game called?
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. Bugdom.
Absolutely. Bugdom.
And there was
really?
Another one, a dinosaur game that was very similar.
Dino. They bundled something. That I forget. It's on. We've provided the link, pangeasoft.net. The other game that I downloaded is called Enigmo. Now, Enigmo is $9.99. So this is not one of these 99-cent dumb little fun toys, but it's pretty serious. I don't know if you call it a game. I guess it is.
It's kind of a problem-solving puzzler.
Yeah, and what's really cool is that you have to set up little drums or little bowls where water is bounces off into each different spout, and then from the spout or from the drum bounces to another one, and you've got to build these kind of like channels. And I think it's really unique. There's nothing like it on the iPhone. Nothing.
No, this is a game that was available for the Mac as well. I find that Enigmo is much easier to play with a mouse and a keyboard than it is with the iPhone. I don't know if my fingers are just too big or what, but I have a hard time precisely rotating these things exactly where I want it to go.
It's not. It's just. It's more difficult on a small surface, but it's still fun.
It looks really cool on the iPhone, though.
It's cool on the iPhone. The graphics are really good. The sound is really cool. I can't get past a third level or second level. I just started playing it, but I definitely recommend if you want an intriguing puzzle type, I don't know if you call it action, it's puzzle. So it's an entertainment puzzle game for the iPhone. It's called Enigmo. It's $9.99 or $10. I wish they did a light version. I don't think they do, but that would be really cool. I think
a couple, like two or three levels to try out. Well, and if you like it, then you
can buy
it.
I think so. It would. I think that would win them over more customers, so that people don't think that the $10 is expensive. So that's it from Pangea and from E-Zone and of course PosiMotion. I'm testing out a bunch of other cool apps on the iPhone, and then lastly. Each week, I'm going to create an App Minute tip of the week, and that's something that's going to go into App Minute. And I got this from our friend Jim Dalrymple, and Jim is over at Mac Central. And I pinged him on iChat, and I said, Jim, I just downloaded the latest update. I think it's 202 for iPhone, and I have the original iPhone. So it updated the software. It took forever, and then it rendered it useless. The iPhone would not work. It said it cannot initiate the iPhone. It just couldn't initiate it. I forgot the word that it used, but basically, it couldn't initialize. It couldn't find the iPhone, and it said sorry, and it just had that little connector as if it was a brand new iPod or iPhone, excuse me. Connecting to iTunes, that screen. So I didn't know what to do. There was no way, even rebooting the iPhone, nothing would work. I took out the SIM card. We're talking about the original iPhone. And everything worked before this update, Tim. Everything worked. All the apps, Wi-Fi, everything except using the phone portion of the iPhone. So
this is affectionately called bricking your phone.
And so what Jim said, hey, Sam, there's a DCU or DFU. I forgot the name of this, but I can go back and look at the iChat record. And I said, well, what is that? He goes, okay, hold down the power button and the home button simultaneous. Now, what he didn't tell me is first have it plugged in. So first have it plugged in, have iTunes running, have it, just have that all plugged in, as if you're syncing it, as if you're going to sync it. Hold down the power button and the home button simultaneous. The iPhone will reboot. The white Apple logo will arise. And as that happens, take your hand off of the power button.
So leave your finger
on
the home
button.
Okay.
For about 5 seconds. All of a sudden, a dialogue comes up and it says, do you wish to restore? And what happens is it goes and it will ask you, do you want to restore from your, and it will give you a selection if you have several restores that you've done or your last iPhone that you used, and that's
gotcha.
Which is my 3G. Fine, I restored it. It took a long time.
But I believe what it's doing is erasing the iPhone at that point, and then it's reinstalling from fresh.
And Jim was right. He said, Sam, this typically helps with these glitches that I've had, and I've never used that. I didn't even know about that. You didn't know about that. It is a real app minute tip of the week. And now my iPhone works. I can put the apps on. I can take them off. I can do anything I want. Before, but you know, I wish Apple would have shown this, but I'm sure they do bury.
I'm sure
somewhere.
It's buried somewhere exactly. And that's what we're going to be doing with App Minute as well, Sam. We're going to be providing some of these tips and tricks that iPhone users really do need to know.
Absolutely. So there you have it. We've got our App Minute pick of the week, or several picks of the week. And
yeah, we have Crazy Mouth, Enigmo, and Cro-Mag Rally. You'll find links to all of those up at mymac.com, and it's going to be for show, 197.
Absolutely. I look forward to seeing you folks on App Minute.
Thanks, Sam. And that was Sam Levin's Cool Mac Picks, and we are back, and we have one of our long-lost co-hosts, Lee Gibbons. Hello, Lee.
Hey, everybody.
You must be really busy over there at America Online, because we haven't had you on the show for, I think it's been...
A month and a half.
It's been at least a month. Yeah, we've been pretty busy getting all... You know, we started out working on one big application, AOL Desktop, and now we're looking to launch a whole bunch of things this fall, so we're really happy about it.
That's kind of surprising to me, because all I keep hearing about AOL with all the bloggers who, you know, they know everything, is the doom and gloom at AOL, and the people who work for AOL are in a state of panic, and they don't know what's going on. But then I talk to you, and you don't sound very panicky to me, Lee.
No, I think there's a lot of hubris going out there, especially with the whole Microsoft Yahoo thing and everybody talking about what's next for Google. And at AOL, I think they're doing a pretty good job on the, you know, we're increasing our page views when it comes to our websites. And the Mac team, you know, this is a banner year for us, you know, winning Apple Design Award and all that. You know, we're still using that, we're basking in that glow for as long as we can. So
now AOL is not losing money, right?
Well, we're losing subscribers, you know, since we went to free. We are,
but you're supplementing that though with the ads.
Yeah, we have the ad business that's really taken off. But if you look at the number of subscribers that are leaving, that are moving to free, the balance is something that they're trying to get to. But yeah, our CEO just announced that we have kind of separated out what we call the dial-up business. We call it Access. So the Access business is primed, and maybe, you know, up for sale.
So I would call it the anchor, but that's just me.
Yeah.
Broadband is here to stay. And then again, you know, there's a lot of people in rural areas who really, really do need dial-up.
Yep.
Yeah, last time I checked, I think there's still 30 million people who don't have access to broadband.
That's amazing. Yeah. And I'm sure somebody will buy that dial-up business, whether it's, you know, Earthlink or a company like that. Because somebody has to service these rural customers, and so I think that's important. So let's get away from the business side of things, because I don't want to show my ignorance too much. David, you were talking about Pandora.
Yeah, and I saw a report this week that Pandora are pretty upset that the music industry is upping the rates you have to pay to license music for internet radio. They upped them last year, and Pandora said that that was going to make things very difficult for them. And this year they're talking about upping them again to the point that Pandora would say they wouldn't be able to offer their radio app anymore and would effectively go out of business.
They're going to raise it more than traditional radio pays.
Yeah, I mean, basically, it comes across as a mechanism to actually just drive internet radio out of business because they seem to see it as a threat. So, I mean, what's your take on it, Lee? Because obviously, AOL does a radio app.
And I got to say, that radio app is still within my top five applications on the iPhone. I love AOL Radio. And I've said this before. I don't say that because you're an AOL guy here, Lee. If you quit AOL tomorrow and went to work for Microsoft, I would still say AOL Radio is one of my favorite apps. I just love it.
Yeah, I mean, if you really can, if I could get a camera and show people the AOL Radio team, it's one of our two top developers. They're the kind of guys who are really passionate about their coding capability and how well they could build apps. And whenever I can on the AOL Mac product blog, I tout their experience. But those guys really do care about building really good Mac apps, and it's something that we're trying to get throughout the company. And it's amazing how unifying that one app was. We have all the different teams. AOL owns Winamp. And we own some other music type
apps. I didn't realize that you guys owned Winamp at this point.
Yeah, we own a lot of things people don't. I think we could probably talk for 20 minutes on all the things we own that people don't know. But yeah, we own Winamp. We helped Firefox get started, as part of the Mozilla Foundation. We own Engadget, TMZ TV show.
Ugh, I wouldn't brag about that one.
But 335 million people paid views
can't
a month.
Can't be wrong.
I'm always amazed how many people want to see, Jen and John Mayer break up and stuff like that.
Well, the funny thing is, I'm not the type of person who really follows celebrity. I could care less. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I just sent out an email to a couple of friends of mine last night. It was a video of Britney Spears singing in concert without her voice going through. It was raw mic. It wasn't going through the mix board. And, whatever they do with the mix board to make her sound better and blending it in with the actual instruments and the backup singers, it was just her singing, and it was so bad. I mean, she can't carry a tune. It was embarrassing. But I digress. I had to get that out there because I was just – I even called my wife, and this is one of the – honey, come here and watch this. And the look on my wife's face was just – it was classic. She was just like, oh, my – is that real? And I said – yeah, that's real. And she went, she can't sing. I went, duh.
Oh, yeah. That's
pretty sad.
That's pretty sad. And our general manager for AOL Radio, who kind of manages the business side of things, she's been quoted to say that, the business strategy to really do radio over the web is getting, it's being attacked on all sides. It's going to get to the point where it's going to cost people way too much to provide these radio services.
Why does the radio – where does the music industry want to shut down internet radio? Because for me anyways, I can say if I'm listening to something on AOL Radio that I don't own the MP3 for already, mm-hmm. and I really dig it, I have the ability from within AOL Radio to go find out who sung the song, to jump to iTunes and buy the song right then. They're making money that they would not have made
otherwise
had I not had that option.
Yep.
Yeah, they really don't understand. I think that some of the people in the radio industry, still back in the days of LPs, when the radio labels owned everything, they owned the artist. They don't understand, I think, that the amount of reach you get by having internet radio. They start looking at things like, when people listen to internet radio, they usually have the player in the back and they're listening to the audio and doing other things. They're not focused on, the ability to, they can't put ads up that are like display ads, or they can't get any search revenue. So they're saying that they can't monetize these things, but there's still the ability to put audio ads in. And then like you said, there's all that affiliate income they could get from letting people link out to music download sites.
Absolutely.
Is there also a thing that they're getting pressure from the labels who, because they're worried that the internet audio stream can be captured and effectively pirating the music.
But you could do that. You've always been able to do that. And ever since cassette tapes came out, you could do that. Hell, I could do that on a real
deal. Yeah, and for that whole time, they've been constantly trying to lobby people to mm-hmm. put in technological or legal safeguards to stop people doing it.
Well, Canada has a law that if you buy a blank cassette, there's a tax on there that goes directly to groups like the RIAA because they're just assuming that you're going to pirate music if you're buying a blank tape.
Yeah, well, that's true. And, you know, it's really kind of interesting. I heard that Bono was in his French villa and he was playing his music too loud.
Yeah.
And somebody recorded four songs off the new album, and put it up on the web. So,
you know, every time I do a search for that, I'm just finding the news stories about that. But I have yet to find the actual recordings. I'd love to hear it. Yeah. I'm a big U2 fan. If I could go download these over-the-air recordings, that would not cause me not to buy the U2 album. Because I love U2. I think they're probably right now my favorite band, mm-hmm. As far as being, you know, such a popular band. I really still dig U2. Don't like all their politics and all the crap they do on the side, but I think they make really good music.
Yeah, I do remember the days camping out on the sidewalk getting tickets for U2 back in college. So
I think the Joshua Tree is probably within my top three albums of all time.
Yeah, the classic stuff is excellent.
Absolutely. And I like some of the new stuff, too. I really do. Why do you think, though, that the RIAA keeps going after these internet radio shows? Do you think it's simply because they're worried about piracy, or do you think it's just a money grab? Pandora must be making more money than they're claiming. They really need to come off the paycheck. What do you think, Guy?
I don't know. I think that the music company won't be happy until they've done one of two things. Either squeeze the penny out of every single person that they possibly can, or it just blows up in their face and, you know, they head off to Acapulco or something.
What do you think, Lee? Do you think that the record companies, the music... I don't want to say it's the record companies, because I think it's more or less the governing bodies that these record companies have set up in cohesion with each other.
Well, they're all on the boards of all the licensing companies. They own a lot of the same things. So I'm not sure if they... I think it's a classic case of they just don't understand the internet business. They don't understand the download music model still. I think they still think that all their customers are pirates and they're out to steal. And, you know, when you... Like I always tell people, when you look at your customer and you view your customer as a thief, that's kind of a bad starting point for you to figure out how to get additional revenue. I mean, the goal is to increase your average revenue per unit, which is per listener. How do you do that? The easiest way is, you know, work with companies that build things like Shazam on the iPhone and work with Pandora and make it easy for people to do music discovery.
And what do you think the solution, David?
Unfortunately, I think the music industry needs to shape up. I think Lee's absolutely...
They're not going to.
No, they won't.
I know that, and I think they're really going to suffer for it. I mean, I heard a report the other day that apparently they're now up in arms because they've realized that the amount of money they get paid for licensing music to go in games like Rock Band and Guitar Hero, they're saying, oh, we're not being paid enough.
Warner Brothers did that.
Yeah, they're just idiots. Basically, whatever happens is they look at new technology and it offers them really cheap ways to distribute and make massive profits on their content. And instead of embracing that and saying, here's a way for us all to make a lot of money, they view it as a threat. And so what they do is they try and squeeze maximum amount of money out of it and, piss a whole load of people off at the same time. And they really are, you know, prime examples of cutting off your nose to spite your face.
How do you reconcile that view with what? Who was the company that was the first to join Apple with DRM-free music? Who was that?
EMI.
How do you reconcile the fact that EMI went ahead and said, you know what, let's take off all this DRM crap and just sell the music? At the time, it was 30 cents more, although that price is gone now. It's the same price.
But EMI, I mean, it all comes down to if you get something enlightened at the top of the company, then you can get somewhere. But EMI are fairly small in the music business. They're not Warner's or Sony, and it's the idiots who run those organizations that you really got to worry about.
So you think once the old guard, Lee, passes away or retires and we get some more progressive people, anybody that was born after 1970, let's say.
Hey,
okay, 60 guy.
60.
No, that's too old. That's
damn
too
it.
Old. That's 1970. Because I'm just under that one. I was born in 1970.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Set up the rules for yourself, Tim. Way to go.
Absolutely. Do you think that's what it's going to take when the younger generation that's working at these music companies take over? Or do you think that they're going to be so inundated with the old school way of doing business that the internet is the enemy, that it really ain't going to make a difference, that it's already game over for them?
Yeah,
I think they're going to make mostly the same mistakes.
Yeah, well, I think when business models start failing, you know, like suing your customers and doing all these strategies, when all those things fail and the industry is really hurting, I think people who understand this will rise up and save a lot of this. I think Apple's done the best so far when it comes to saving the music industry, but I don't think they could do it on their own.
No, absolutely not. What do you think about?
It may be too late.
Yeah,
there's a lot of artists out there right now, you know, because home recording equipment is getting to the point where they don't need the studios. They're doing their own marketing and they're getting their stuff out there on iTunes. You know, digital distribution has kind of leveled the playing field, you know, because before it was all a question of how do you get it into the stores? How do we get that display up so that everybody knows that this new album is available? And if you weren't on the list of rising artists, you didn't get that kind of support. But now it doesn't matter.
Yes, yes, it does, because you look at what Nine Inch Nails just did recently, and they sold a gazillion copies of their album.
Yeah, but that was Nine Inch Nails.
Exactly. They already got to that pinnacle because of the record industry. You can't count on that if you're a new artist coming up and you want to sell music. Yeah, you can get your stuff in iTunes, but who the hell's going to hear it? Who's going to find it in iTunes? How do you promote yourself to your listeners? How do you get out there? Just because you're in iTunes doesn't mean that you're going to go anywhere.
There are artists who are promoting themselves using MySpace and Facebook, and there are artists certainly here in the UK who've you know, really built their own promotional push on you know, word of mouth through MySpace.
But can't you only go so far that way, though? I mean, well, there's a ceiling to that.
Yeah, but once the point is,
you can hit a critical mass.
Yeah, exactly. Once you get enough people hearing your music, and if people like the music, then it takes on a life of its own, and then you start hitting the touring circuit, and that's the way that you know you can build it up that way. The point is that, you know, there are other ways of doing it rather than selling your soul to a blood-sucking record label, and you know the music industry hates that because, you know, they're terrified that they're going to get cut out of the loop.
And they will.
Now, Lee, you said Apple can't do it on their own with iTunes, and I think we all agree with that.
Yep.
What do you think about the news of Dell, with an ex-Apple employee leading this charge at Dell, that they're going to come out with some kind of initiative to bind all these other online music companies together under some kind of a common umbrella? It's still kind of iffy on how they're going to do this, but kind of take on iTunes that way. Have you read anything like that?
Yeah, I read about, I think his name's Tim Buescher.
Yes, that's what it is.
Yeah, I read the Business Week article, and I do remember when Tim left Apple, and I remember when Tim went over to Zing, and then Zing started working on a Sirius handheld satellite radio, and then I think they worked with Sansa to build a Sansa Connect. But I just don't believe in Dell. I don't think Dell understands this whole space and understands. Dell's not a company that innovates. Dell's a company that the only innovation Dell's really great at is supply chain innovation.
Yeah, and they're very good at that.
When they're good at the supply chain, but when it comes to innovating on any other level, I just don't think they understand, you know, what it takes to build like an iTunes ecosystem that, you know, that Steve Jobs is able to put together.
Do you think Apple's caught Dell as far as distribution now?
Oh, no doubt about it. You know, Apple, sometimes their inventory turns, and if you look at, you know, parts on hand and things like that, they're one of the world-class organizations that understand supply chain. I remember reading a long time ago Apple was doing a large ERP system and trying to understand, you know, they're looking at SAP R3 and some other systems to sort of, you know, be more efficient when it comes to manufacturing, and it completely failed. I think it failed once. I think Apple ended up spending like $120 million on that system, and they had to scrap it. But they started again, but they have a whole new mindset, and I think it always starts from the top. if the people at the top don't really believe in the IT system or the
or
ERP
don't understand
system
it.
Or don't understand why they need it, it's destined to fail. So I think Apple right now understands. If you look at everything they're doing, they understand. They had a little debacle with the Mobile Me.
Yeah,
but
just
a
little.
They understand execution pretty well. I think they try to. People keep forgetting. The iPhone 3G was largest consumer electronics launch in history. There's some things that it was pretty big. It wasn't. It's not. There's nothing they could go look at and see a case study on it because it's the biggest. So, but I still think Apple, when it comes to manufacturing excellence, inventory control, and understanding what to build and what not to build, that's amazing.
Harry McCracken, who we had on the show, wasn't very long ago. Is 2 weeks? No, was 2 weeks ago?
It was
194. So that was 3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago.
He was running his new site now because he's not with PC World, technologizer.com.
Yes. Had trouble with
it. Yeah, I did. I don't know. It's just one of those words. And I told him that on the show. It's just one of those words that I can't seem to say. He had a list, and I found it kind of interesting. What's the cheapest? Are Macs more expensive than PCs? And so I was reading this, and I was quite surprised that the most expensive laptop on his list was not a Mac. It was actually a Sony Vaio. And so I thought that was really... We just lost David Cohen, by the way. Yeah, it's that UK connection, It happens occasionally. He looks at, let's see, I'm bringing up the page right now, and he looks at the MacBook. He looks at, this is the wrong one. I'm looking at the all-in-ones. But he was looking at the laptops, the last one I looked at. But the Sony Vaio was by far the most expensive. Do you think that Apple really is price competitive guy when it comes to laptops now?
I think they are price competitively. It really depends on what it is you're looking for in a laptop. If you're looking for just a basic machine and you don't have a whole lot of money to spend, well, you're not going to buy a Mac. You're going to get some Walmart special.
$599.
Yeah, and you're either going to use Windows Home Unpremium or whatever they call that, basic Home Basic. Or you're gonna put Linux on it.
What do you think, Lee?
Well, I just read a report. I can't remember what analysts said this, but they think Apple's going to have a pretty monstrous back to school. I think Apple really is building. I think there's this whole idea of quality. People buy the iPhone, they buy the iPod, then they try out the competitors. They see what the quality is. They know you get what you pay for. So you go in the Walmart, you buy your $399 laptop, you use it, and you're like, oh my gosh, this is a piece of junk. Then they go back.
Soccer.
They go back the next year, and they're like, "Well, if I invest $999 in a MacBook for my daughter when she goes to college, she's going to get more use out of it."
I'm kind of surprised that that debate's still raging out there myself.
It's all the time, And as a matter of fact, just talking about sales, they're saying that Apple. There's some analysts saying that Apple may sell over 3 million Macs by the end of September for that quarter.
Are either one of you surprised that Apple didn't have an announcement with a back to school, a new kind of MacBook or a MacBook Pro or even an iMac for that matter? We're almost out of time for the back to school crowd.
We are. Most of the back to school sales have already happened.
Right. And so there's nothing from Apple. There's no new products that Apple can point at and saying, here is our back-to-school new laptop. It's the same laptops when they quit school as that are out there right now. There's nothing new from Apple for back-to-school. Does that surprise you, David Cohen?
Yeah, I think it does. It's a big market for them, and you would think that they'd be looking to get into it. But who knows what's – I mean, they're a company that are trying to – spin a lot of plates at the moment, so maybe product refresh is down on their list of priorities at the moment.
Speaking of product refresh, there's been a lot of rumors out there talking about new designs for their entire portable line.
Yeah,
that
but
being
that's
said,
been a, we've
yeah.
been talking about that since I started this podcast. The MacBooks look almost the same as the iBooks that it replaced.
Right.
My MacBook Pro sitting in the other room right now. doesn't look any different. A few cosmetic changes, but it doesn't really look any different than the PowerBook G4 that I had, you know, before this podcast even got off the ground in 2004.
Well, that's true. But right now, Apple is running this back-to-school promotion where you get a free iPod with...
iPod Touch.
iPod Touch, right. And, I mean, that's pretty significant. That's a $300, you know, device to sell along with a $999 MacBook. But yep. Think about this. Maybe what they're trying to do is clear their inventory. Because if you think back to just before they were selling the 3G iPod, they basically said, okay, you know, there is no product available at all, because they had basically sold out of what they had, and with the new one coming out, they weren't going to put any more money into it to build up inventory. So maybe this is part of a challenge for their sales partners to sell as much of the older stuff and get it out of the pipeline before the new stuff comes out.
Lee, did you see the report where Apple was basically telling their retailers to stock up on MacBooks now?
Right.
Yeah, I think that people, I think if you look at last quarter, they had a 58% quarter, you know, year-over-year increase on sales, and that's just unbelievable.
Which is huge.
I mean, especially
that's so big.
Especially for a company that sells, you know, over $20 billion worth of stuff. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So, I read the same analyst reports. One guy thinks 3 million in the September quarter, and then maybe 4 to 5 million max in the next quarter.
Unbelievable.
They're saying stock up, because if you don't have enough stock for all these people coming to buy, it's going to be tough for you to make sales. I really do think, you know, being a product person, and finally at AOL we have more than one product coming out, I understand that it is a lot of work to get a product launched. And the other thing is, you want to keep mind share. I think Apple wants everyone to focus on iPhone 3G right now. So if you look at the website, it's iPhone 3G all day, all night, and you know they're really pushing to keep. I think Apple's trying to show people that they can innovate on the OS. They can innovate on other things, but form factor is not. I remember back in the old days, form factor used to change every 16 months.
Yep.
Everyone used to say, "Yeah, that one's getting tired. Next, let's see what's next." You look at the G5 case. You know, my PowerBook G4 looks pretty identical to my MacBook Pro, except for a couple small things.
Yeah.
I think Apple's really trying to show that they can innovate in other areas and not worry about form factor too much. And form factor does make things difficult, especially if you're a repair house, a supply, you know, if you're supplying like accessories and things like that. Changing the form factor all the time really does wreak havoc on all that, you know, the whole ecosystem that you're trying to build around your products.
And I think the other thing as well is that, you know, they've got to have something to talk about at Macworld in January, and maybe a full refresh of the line then would be a good idea.
David, do you think that Moore's Law is dead?
No, I don't think so. I think the chip companies are constantly innovating to find new ways to squeeze performance and power efficiency out of the chips. I mean, it looks like that in the next 12 to 18 months, Intel will be going fully quad-core across their line. And so you'll be getting more cores, and you can expect, you know, certainly the next couple of years to have MacBook Pros, I would have thought, with quad-core in rather than dual-core.
Yeah, but most applications aren't multiprocessor aware.
No, but that will change. Yet. I mean, the fact that dual core is now so prevalent among PCs means that will start to change. It will take a while, because programming multi-threaded apps that really take advantage of dual processors is no mean feat. But I think, you know, as the technology becomes more available and more common, then people will start being able to do that. If you remember sort of about 5 years ago, they were saying that hard disks would never get any bigger because they'd hit up to the physical limits of technology, and then they found a way around it. And, you know, we now have a terabyte disks in fairly small form factors. So if you throw enough R&D money into these things, and I think we all know that the tech companies throw plenty of R&D money at chip design and hard drive design and that sort of thing, I think you can continue to innovate and find ways to bring more performance out.
Last topic before we wrap up the show, and we're going to start with Lee, and then I want to get Guy's opinion, and we'll finish with David. Here's the question. With Apple selling more and more iPhones and iPods, with the Mac selling more and more units, is there a ceiling that Apple can hit by keeping all of these products under one corporate umbrella? Or do you think that Apple's going to have to eventually spin off iPhone, iPod into a fully owned subsidiary? We'll start with Lee.
Well, at one point I thought it would be really hard to manage, you know, a company with 20,000 employees, $20 billion in revenue. They have employees all over Cupertino. I remember in the old days I would go there and I'd see buildings, you know, IBM, Java, Sun. There would be lots of different companies, but everywhere you look now, it's Apple. But I think the way they have their company set up, where Steve Jobs has a small group of people around him to get the products, yeah, figure out what products to build and what products to launch. So they have a very good way of doing business now and planning strategy and executing strategy. I think that they're probably fine the way they are. I don't think that it's really necessary to split the groups into separate companies. I think they're going to lose some synergy. I see a lot of synergy between the products. It's something that's tossed around in business school all the time. But I think Apple does a really good job, managing the halo effect. I mean, even at AOL, we're finding people now who are coming to our site looking for AOL Radio for the Mac because they loved it on AOL Radio for iPhone. We're starting to see that within our own product line. So I think Apple understands how to tie these products together really nicely, and I think they could go. They still have a lot of room in the single company mode.
Apple used to be a very decentralized run company. Do you think that's still true or no?
Well, I think it's a very focused company. So the small group of people that Steve surrounds himself with, I think it a lot of the decisions are made through there. I don't see Apple, launching products like Steve always talks about. You don't launch products just to launch them. I read some articles about why doesn't Apple, do like knowledge navigator type concepts anymore. I don't think Apple really needs to. They do a lot of the work inside. It's like Steve always says, he throws out three great ideas sometimes just to make sure one gets out there. They want to make sure that the product that they launch is the right product. It's the product they want to use. And I think if they keep managing it that way and not looking to, put out products every other month, I think that's some of the problems AOL had in the past. We'd launch, 100 different products in a year. But a lot of people, a lot of our customers wouldn't understand how these products fit. And our EVP, who's now running, who's our new chief marketing officer, he understands that really well. So we've actually are gaining by cutting back. So I think
it makes sense.
I think it's definitely a focus. It's a company focus thing. If you're doing too many things, I remember Apple in the old days. You remember they had the advanced technology group building stuff. Everybody's doing their own thing. There's no
exactly.
There wasn't any focus. I think the company has focus now, and having corporate focus like that enables you to manage a large company without having to break them up into more discrete functional areas.
Gil Emilio's book, My 500 Days at Apple, he goes into that quite a bit.
Yep.
And one of the first things that he wanted to change was the decentralized aspects of Apple because there was just too many groups doing their own thing, overlapping technologies that if they would have worked together, if they would have been communicating, they'd have saved a lot of time and they'd have been a lot more productive. And there was this products being created willy-nilly that nobody was in charge of.
Yep.
That just went nowhere. So what do you think, Guy? Do you think Apple's going to stay Apple Incorporated, or do you think there's going to be the iPhone, iPod division, there's going to be the computer division, or do you think it's going to stay centralized?
If they were going to make any kind of change at all, it would be a break along the lines of hardware and software. I think that all of their hardware fits right now, and it's going like gangbusters. There's a lot of product being put out. A lot of people are buying it. And the software side of it, they've had a couple problems of late. But basically, when you've got, like, say, the iLife team, well, they're talking to the OS people, and the OS people are talking to the iTunes people. So if they were going to do a break, in my opinion, it would be along the lines of hardware and software.
David Cohen?
I don't see them doing it. I don't see any advantage to them doing it. The only reason you would do something like that is if you want to get something out of it in terms of making a particular area more efficient. The whole thing actually is pretty efficient as it is hanging together. And as you know, both Lee and Guy were saying, you get that synergy. You get the, I mean, the advantage Apple's got that, you know, you look at Microsoft. We've talked about Microsoft a fair bit. You know, Microsoft has all these different divisions and they all compete with each other. The Windows guys want to do things a certain way. The Windows Live guys want to do things on the cloud a different way. And they're actually fighting with each other all the time. Whereas Apple, the hardware runs the software supports the hardware. Everyone knows that it's all about driving more hardware sales by making the software and the user experience more what people want to see. And so the whole thing kind of gels and works together. And so I think they would lose a lot of that if they started trying to break the company down. So I don't see anything like that happening until Steve Jobs isn't around anymore. Then maybe they'll think about doing it.
My opinion is you guys are right. I don't think Apple is going to do anything like this. All you have to do is really look at a few different aspects of what Apple's doing. Look at the iLife suite, how they all kind of talk together. iTunes fits right in with the iLife suite. You can share your pictures there. It already has your music. It has your movies. That all syncs with your iPod, your iPhone. It also syncs. It's already on your computer. But you could share it with the other computers that are on your wireless network. It also syncs with the Apple TV. So Apple, all these products still relate back to each other, and the Macintosh is still the centralized hub of all that digital content, and I don't see that changing at all anytime soon.
Exactly. You know, I have my iTunes on my computer managing all my libraries, my iPhone remote controlling my Apple TV upstairs and downstairs. I have Mobile Me pushing my email.
Oh, that's right. You have two Apple TVs. That's why I didn't like you. I knew there was a reason somewhere.
Yeah, I went to the Apple store yesterday. This little story of why I love Apple sometimes more than any other company. I had a defective MagSafe power adapter, and the guy goes, "Let me."
Oh, that's new.
Yeah, my MagSafe died on me, so I walked.
Well, no, I'm saying what you're about to describe is the new policy of Apple. So
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, I just read that they're going to start, you know, doing replacements for MagSafe. But so I felt like I was probably the first one to bring this up. So I brought it in, and the guy says, "Do you know your serial number?" I couldn't find it on the web. So he just says, "What's your .Mac account?" He goes, he looked it up on the computer. He goes, "Wow, you buy a lot of stuff from us." So I said, "Yeah, I got one of each." He goes,
"Let's keep you happy."
He goes, "You have two Apple TVs," and he went back and got me a power adapter and came right out. He was one of the best geniuses I've met when I was at a retail store.
It's a great story, and I think that's you're going to see more and more of that coming from Apple in the future. They really know what they're doing in retail, it seems. And the online experience, as good as it is, I think that the walking into a store when you have a problem or walking into the store with your credit card, that's even a better experience in person, don't you think, Guy?
Yeah, I would agree. You know, there's they have your typical person there at your, you know, the cashier and all that, but If you're, there's been plenty of times when I've gone to buy something at the Apple store. I'm standing there in line, and somebody will come up and says, "Oh, you're just getting that software?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He says, "Well, come on over here." And he's got his little handheld device, swipes my card, gives me my receipt. He says, "Well, do you need the receipt or can I just email it?" It's like, email it.
And just that's great.
Bing, bang, boom. I'm out the door, and I got my product, and everyone's happy.
Well, for a show that when we started talking before we even recorded, Guy, thinking, what are we going to talk about? Nothing's going on in the Mac world this week. We kind of had a good full show here. It's almost an hour and 20 minutes already.
Wow.
Excellent.
Well, when you get some Mac people together and they're passionate about the technology that they're using, this is the kind of thing that happens. So I want to thank all three of you guys, Lee, David, and Guy, for coming on the show this week. Are you going to be with us again next week, Lee?
I think I will. I have something that's coming up. I think it's school-related for one of my kids, but I think I could definitely make it.
Okay. We might have to postpone next week's show for a day later. Does anybody have a problem with that? I know we're doing it live on the air, but instead of Thursday, what do you guys think about Friday podcast?
Friday, I probably won't be able to be there. I have Taekwondo that night.
Because it's my daughter who's going into kindergarten. It's kind of like the open house, meet the teacher thing, and I kind of really need to be there for that.
Hey, Tim, I think I have the same thing next week. That's on Thursday.
Is that Thursday?
Yeah.
So let's move mine is on Thursday. Let's move the show to Friday. I know we're going to lose you, Guy.
Yeah.
But it'll give you a week off. David, are you good for Friday?
I should be right for Friday.
That'll be okay for all the people that hate me.
That's right. And you got a lot of hate mail. Did anybody actually send you any email?
No, they didn't.
What's your email address?
It's tim@mymac.com.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I did get some hate mail about last week's show, and I don't think you probably heard that.
No, they can send it to either dbminute@gmail.com or notmacnews@gmail.com.
There you go. Guy will check both of those. So if you want to disagree with his opinions on what we talked about last week and somewhat this week,
yeah,
or anything else, that Guy is becoming our own Dvorak. That's all I could say.
Yeah, see?
So we'll be back a day, because I'm actually going to be out of the state for a majority of the week next week, and then the Thursday is the kindergarten roundup. Really don't want to miss that.
You can't.
Yeah, I've got another one coming in another, you know, 4.5 years, but still, I don't want to miss that. And I think it's important for parents to go there for the first day of school to meet the teacher so you can reassure your kid.
Sure.
My wife's probably going to be walking in the door any minute, so we need to wrap the podcast. Once again, thank you to MacSales.com.
Great guys.
And seriously, guys, if you guys are working on a computer, it's only $17.95, an 11-piece portable toolkit. It really is worth it. So my name's Tim Robertson, and for Guy, Lee, and David, we'll see you next week.
You can stop now.